sometimes we imagine a pastor as sort of a superhero. He's able to do everything that we ask of him, making the right choices, and has no struggles, right? He's figured it out somehow, and that's just not always the case.
Everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Today, we're in LifeWord Studios in Conway, Arkansas, the media ministry branch of the BMA of America. We produce content in over 150 languages to 127 countries to a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. I want to thank you for being here today. We have a special guest with us today, Nathan Winneke. He is a licensed professional counselor here in the state of Arkansas. Nathan, it's great to have you with us this morning.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate you having me.
So we kind of very vaguely discussed what we wanted to talk about today. And you being a pastor and me being a pastor, we know that pastors kind of deal with some unique circumstances that can affect our mental health in many different ways. So let's just start the conversation off there. What do we as pastors, what are some things that we need to be aware of so that we don't fall into certain, let's say, mental health traps?
Yeah, it's a really good question because it's not something that we talk a whole lot about. I think with our congregation, sometimes we talk about mental health and the importance of taking care of yourself. But sometimes we imagine a pastor as sort of a superhero, right? That he's able to do everything that we ask of him. He's always heavy in the word. He's always making the right choices and has no struggles, right? He's figured it out somehow. And that's just not always the case. I think pastors in particular, although they may be popular with their congregation, can still feel very lonely.
Yeah,
like they are isolated and by themselves, which leads to a whole myriad of issues that come up in him that he's not really sure how to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the first things that I was told when I went into ministry by one of my mentors was ministry is particularly pastoring is probably one of the loneliest offices that you could ever hold. And people don't understand that you could be surrounded by others, but it's possible to be lonely without being alone.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if we think about our congregations in general, whether it's a marriage or a family or life group, Sunday school classes, you know, we teach this principle of, you know, you were created for relationship. That everyone needs connection. The problem is that for a pastor, he's, like you said, surrounded by this congregation of people. And there's this question, can I trust them? You know, can I be vulnerable with them that would create this authentic relationship? And more often than not, they don't feel like they can.
Right? Yeah.
So having those authentic relationships is important for a pastor.
Yeah. I know that in one of the churches that I pastored, there was a family there that my wife and I were very close to. I mean, almost considered them grandparents. And then an issue arose in the church, and they completely turned their back on us. And it was devastating, not just in the role of the pastor, that somebody that you trusted in the church forsook you, but someone that you felt was family turned their back on you.
Right. Yeah. And that can be very isolating.
Yeah.
So where does the pastor go when he needs help?
Right.
Because all of their time and effort typically poured into the church that God has called them to. And they don't give themselves much time or themselves much thought on, hey, am I doing okay mentally? Am I doing okay emotionally?
Yeah.
And the needs that I have internally.
Yeah. One of my deacons say often, the pastor is the only person in the church without a pastor.
Right.
And it's so true. And I have found, and probably by no fault of anyone, that as a pastor, if I reach out to another pastor, they're almost even hesitant to feel like they could trust me, especially if we're in the same association or the same denomination. That they're very hesitant. And then others, it kind of feels like we're out here and it's all for one and one for all.
Right. And, you know, that you know, to have an authentic relationship, you have to be vulnerable. I guess there's no way around that. Whether it's your marriage or with your kids or whatever, I mean, you have to be vulnerable in order to have an authentic relationship. And so this idea that I'm going to share a part of me that no one else gets to see or know can be a scary thing for a pastor, because as you said earlier, will they accept it? You know, when I'm very vulnerable, will they accept it? Will they use it against me? Will they think differently of it?
Yeah. Well, I have come to find in my ministry is that I'm going to be vulnerable to the whole church. And if they don't like it, I was looking for a job when I got this one, you know, that's because the church also needs to see, while it's a very scary place, the church needs to see your vulnerability in order for them to feel like they can share their vulnerability sometimes. And there needs to be that relationship that is not just pastor to parishioner, but friend to friend, that, mm-hmm. that we can get down on a very basic level and talk about life. Nathan, yeah. What would be your suggestion to a pastor who has kind of come to his wit's end and is alone and is stepping into maybe a depressive state?
That's a good question. I think initially, we can't really change anything until we acknowledge that we're having an issue, right? Be honest with ourselves and not trying to, maybe the right phrase is over-spiritualize it, right? That, I mean, definitely depression is a tool of the enemy for sure. But also acknowledging, hey, this is bigger than me at the moment. And in this current state, I might need a little more than prayer. And that may sound sacrilegious, but we do need that authentic relationship. And in order to do that, we have to say, okay, I'm struggling and I need help. I need someone to come alongside me that I can be vulnerable with, that will be empathetic, that will encourage me, that will hold me accountable, right? We're not suggesting that we just pat them on the back and say they're there, but, you know, that can be empathetic and hold me accountable during the struggle that I'm facing.
Yeah. I've been sent so many pastors, you know, that are struggling with different things. And one of my first questions is, have you told anybody else about this? Yeah. And 9 times out of 10, the answer is one of two things. No, I haven't. Or I have, and they said, we're sorry you feel that way. We'll be praying for you.
Right.
And I let's not discount prayer. Let's not discount the work of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. But again, as my friend Ben Bennett has a shirt that he wears just about every day that says it's okay to have Jesus and a therapist. That you know, if we truly look at mental health for what it is, there is this line between spirituality and physical health. And when we cross that line into physical health, it's no different than going to your doctor because you've sprained your ankle. And when we look at mental health conditions, there are some conditions that are equivalent to the level of urgency that we would see as to be a sprained ankle. But then there are other mental health conditions that would be a heart attack or a stroke that really need to get treatment. Why do you think it is that we live in such a religious community that focuses so much on mental health as being a spiritual problem and not a physical problem?
I, lack of a better phrase, I think it's just ignorance, right? That we just don't know. We haven't been taught. We don't understand. I think older generations operated from the mindset of you suck it up and deal with it, right? People have problems, get over it, move on. Now we're at a space where people are beginning to have these conversations and recognizing, hey, yeah, we're coming to church and appearing like we have it all together, but on the inside, we're dying. Mm-hmm. And so that, again, I think it goes back to being vulnerable. We have this fear that if I show you this side of me that very few people get to see, then you won't accept me, you won't love me, you will think differently of me. Mm-hmm. And so rather than share it, we sort of live in shame, right? Which is different from guilt. Guilt says I made a mistake. Shame says I am a mistake.
Yeah.
And so when we don't talk about those things, we just hold it in and we harbor it for a pastor, because he is in a lonely spot. He just carries it. And more often than not, that load is very heavy for him.
Yeah, and it may be that he's in a position of where if he feels like he told someone, he would lose his job.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, one of the churches that I pastored, one Sunday night I was preaching, which I have PTSD and a, you know, anxiety disorder from that PTSD. But I was preaching one Sunday night, and I woke up in the ER at Fort Smith, and I'd had a vasovagal syncope while I was preaching, and then had retrograde amnesia for about 4 hours, and scared people to death, which my father had a stroke when he was very young. And so that's what they were thinking had happened. But, you know, as it is in the South, everybody was in the emergency room, you know, wanting to know that you were okay. And then the doctor comes out and, you know, there's this implied consent because they're in the room with you. And the doctor said, well, this probably has to do with your PTSD, your depression, your anxiety. And it was about 3 weeks later that I was asked to resign. And you can't tell me that the one didn't, you know, correlate with the other. But sometimes pastors find themselves in a position where they don't feel they can be vulnerable because of that. But does that not cause further stress and loneliness?
Sure. I mean, it causes all kinds of stress and loneliness. Because again, where does the pastor go when he needs help? Mm-hmm. You know, who can he trust and be vulnerable with? And I mean, honestly, from a member's perspective, a lot of times we're not really good at knowing what to do with people who are vulnerable, mm-hmm. right? I mean, for instance, if someone passes away in our congregation, our immediate thought is, you know, let's make a casserole and take it to the house, because we want to do something right. to sort of help ease the pain or the pressure. And it's the easiest thing we know to do, when in reality, all that person needs is for someone to say, hey, this has got to be hard. I'm sorry. And just sit. Mm-hmm. Right. We don't have to chase it away. Let's accept the vulnerability that this is hard. And you're right. It's going to be hard for days on end. But I'm going to be right here. Yeah. Right? I'm going to stick with you until this season passes.
Yeah. I've been asked, you know, or it's been said, well, I would go over there and talk with them, but I don't know what to say. And I said, well, if you don't know what to say, say nothing, you know, right. just be present.
Just be there. Yeah.
In all honesty, you could be adding more stress to them by everybody bringing them a casserole. You know, because yeah. now they have to figure out how to store it, you know, mm-hmm. who's going to eat it. Is it going to go bad? You know, and so while it looks like, yeah, that's what we need to do is prepare a meal so they don't have to prepare one, in some situations that could increase the stress level.
It could, yeah.
Yeah. So what are some things that as pastors we should really begin to looking for, which I'm a big on self-care. Pew Research did a study here several years ago, and it said that a pastor has to be on vacation for 14 consecutive days before he's able to clock out from church work, if that makes sense. Sure. I don't know many churches that are going to allow a pastor to go on an extended over 14-day vacation. But what are some of the warning signs that we may look for as ministers, or even as congregants, looking at our pastor that may give us pause?
Yeah. So I think some of the simple things that we talk about specifically maybe with depression and anxiety are things like, do you sleep more or less than you used to? Do you eat more or less than you used to? But for me, one of the biggest key factors is, have you lost your joy? Does, you know, your current position and your job, the thing you used to love doing, is it no longer bringing you joy or fulfillment? Because that's important. Mm-hmm. And as those warning signs come up, I think it's, you know, equally important to be honest with yourself, right?
Sure.
I don't want to do this anymore is a sure sign that, hey, something's not right. And so when pastors find themselves in my office, one of the first questions I'll ask them is, what's changed? Mm-hmm. Let's think back to when all of this I've lost my joy started, and ask the question, what's changed? And more often than not, we can pinpoint that particular moment or episode or season of life that has sort of begun to suck the joy out of you, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And you know, with any counseling and even any mental condition or physical condition, you typically can trace it back to a certain event
Sure.
that triggered, not that word is so cliche now in mental health, that triggered this event. And even in marriage counseling, you know, they've had these issues and well, what happened where you begin to see you begin to grow apart? As parishioners, if we see that our pastor has lost his joy, we see that he is tired all the time. What do we do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think first, just knowing who your pastor is and being familiar, caring about him in general, about his well-being. Hey, how are you doing? The
But
idea.
no, not to interrupt you there, but
Yeah.
know that you may not get an honest answer if you ask how you're doing.
Right, correct. Oh, I'm doing fine, right? Yeah, but being interested, noticing those same signs, even noticing what's going on at the church, right? If you've had the church I pastored during COVID, we buried 13 people in like 9 months.
Yeah.
That should send a message to you as a church member that, hey, this has been a really hard time for my pastor. We need to check in or intercede, maybe offer him extra vacation time or days off, maybe offer to pay for him to go to counseling so he has someone to talk to. Just being willing to be empathetic to what he's dealing with, and then maybe helping him recognize, hey, you've got to take care of yourself and your family. And you know this as a pastor, if you don't control your schedule, somebody else will,
That's right.
right? So helping him be mindful of that and helping him recognize, hey, we support you, we love you, and we want you to be well as a person, right? As a dad, as a husband, not just as our pastor.
You know what the hardest thing was for me to do once I became a pastor?
What's that?
Say no.
Yeah.
And there's so much freedom in being able to say no. I can't do that, or no, I'm not willing to do that, or no, I can't do it this day. Because we have, I don't know about you, but I have church members that when they say, hey, can you meet Wednesday at 2 o'clock? I say, no, I can't. I've got an appointment that day. They may say, well, is it even church related? You know, is it, which I'm very, very open and honest, transparent that 2 o'clock every Thursday, I have a counseling session for myself.
Sure.
With a therapist. And you know, some people when they say Thursday at 2 o'clock, they're not willing to negotiate, you know, that's when they expect you to be there. But we have to, as pastors, have enough what's the word? Enough gall, I guess, maybe, to say this is a time that I have set for me. And it benefits the church because we are church members. Pastors are members of the church. And
Right.
so we have to take care of ourselves as well. I guess probably for me, and I would like your perspective on this as well, probably the least invasive thing that you could do for your pastor, if you see that they are dealing with this, is to go to him and say, hey, we want you to take a couple of days off. Because we love you, not because anything's wrong, but because we love you. And here's where we're going to send you. Would you like to go there, or do you have another place in mind? But for the church to make all the reservations and just send the pastor, but let the pastor know, hey, we love you. We're not going to vote you out while you're gone. That's nothing like that. We just want to show you our appreciation by doing this for you. One of the great ways to do that is LifeWord has a pastor's conference of where you know you can go you know they have all kinds of conferences and things that they put on that we need to as churches take advantage of, but sometimes as churches send our pastors to just have time away and be able to relax and to do things.
Yeah.
Would you agree that that may be the least intrusive way to do that?
Yeah, sure. Whether it's a trip or even just an overnight for him and his wife to have some time to connect, just small tokens. We don't often think of that until maybe it's, what is that called, Clergy Appreciation Month or,
October.
What have you, right? And then you end up having pastors whose congregation does nothing that month, and they're like, "Whoa, well, what does that mean?"
Right.
But yeah, I mean, do anything that you can do to help the pastor acknowledge, we see you, we hear you, we're with you, and we want what's best for you as an individual. I think that's the big thing there is, yes, you're our pastor, but first and foremost, we acknowledge that you're a human being that needs rest and care and love and empathy like the rest of us.
Yeah. I would say a big thing too is for the church to not treat the pastor like an employee.
Sure.
You know, that I'm the overseer here, or I'm the underseer, you know, under Christ and the Holy Spirit. But, you know, you do contribute to my salary, but let's not even talk about that.
Right.
When we put it into a biblical view, the only reason the pastor gets paid is so that he doesn't have to work a secular job and he can devote himself to full-time ministry. So the way I look at it is, I'm not getting paid to be your pastor. I'm getting paid so that I can pastor.
Right.
And if we look as members and church members, we look at it that way, it gives us a different perspective about how we should treat our pastor.
Yeah, because otherwise what ends up happening is, as you were talking about, telling a church member, "Hey, I've got a meeting at 2 o'clock. What ends up happening is, when I say no as a pastor, so much of what I do is performance-based. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't be, yeah. Right? But it's performance-based. So if I say no to you, does that mean you're not going to care about me anymore, you're not going to love me anymore, that I'm not the good pastor you thought I was?
Yeah.
And so there are all sorts issues with value and self-worth that end up being wrapped into that, because I am an employee of the church. And if I'm a good employee, then I'm going to show up when you need me. I'm going to be there, regardless of time it is. And so it becomes performance-based. Mm-hmm. And goodness, no one can live like that for an extended period of time.
Not pleasing that many people at one time, for sure. So what would your... If you could say one thing to a pastor who may be struggling right now, what would that be?
Typically, the first thing I tell pastors when they come to my office is that if you quit pastoring tomorrow, you are still loved by God. Mm-hmm. You still have value. You still have worth. And so recognizing that, yeah, you may be in a very dark season at the moment. But it is possible for you to find joy again. It's possible for you to reconnect with the Lord, but you're going to need help, right? Counseling, we tend to think you got to have something really wrong with you to go to counseling. But more often than not, pastors come to my office and we sit and we just talk through the issues. They need someplace to vent, right? Yeah. Someplace to let it out and ask the question, am I crazy? What's really going on there? But that moment when you can recognize that you have value and worth, whether you're able to make every appointment, every funeral, every surgery, the perfect sermon every Sunday, you have value and worth. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first started pastoring, I worked underneath, actually, Brother Zane Clark. I think you know Brother Zane. Mm-hmm. And when I left as his youth minister and started pastoring on my own, I came by his office one week and I said, "Dad," he said, "Hey, how did Sunday go?" I said, "Sermon wasn't that great. You know, it just didn't go well." He said, "Well, Nathan, you can't be Billy Graham every Sunday." Right. And while we laughed about that, in that moment, he gave me permission to be human.
Absolutely.
Right. And there is so much value to that for a pastor to recognize. There may be a lot of people who are asking you to rise to this standard. But if you can go to bed at night and be okay with God, be in good standing with God, good standing with your wife and your family, you have done your responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, and that is so crucial I think, for pastors to understand.
Yeah. There's a book I would recommend to any pastor who's struggling. You may have read it by Zach Eastland, The Imperfect Pastor. And one thing that he says in there is that it's okay to step away from your calling for a season for you to be healthy. And it's just a great book. So I would recommend that. Nathan, you're also certified in EMDR, and I know that's kind of a newer thing that people are looking into, and other people think it's kind of a hocus pocus kind of things, but EMDR is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So tell us a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, it's really a trauma-informed therapy. And so it's really designed to help an individual recall some of the memories that they have from the trauma they've experienced and connect them with current situations they are in and understanding how that past trauma affects how they're currently living their life. Again, we don't give much thought to that. You know, oh, we grew up maybe in a horrible house, or we had a household, we had a terrible first marriage, or yeah, I might have been abused, but you know what? Let's just get over it. But it really shapes who we are. And because of that, there is trauma within us, and our body is constantly responding to that trauma. You know, if you take, for example, a wife who has been through an abusive relationship, right? She gets married to this great guy, a Christian guy. Things are going great. And on a particular occasion, he goes to raise his hand to grab something, and she immediately pulls back, right? Mm-hmm. That's her body responding to what it's been accustomed to in the past.
Right.
And all EMDR does is help us access some of those memories and those emotions and feelings that are already stored in our body. And connect it with present day emotions and feelings so that healing can take place.
Sure.
And that past trauma doesn't have as much control over you as it currently does.
Yeah. I give a very layman's terminology to EMDR, and I found some agree with this and some don't. So I'm interested to see how somebody certified in EMDR thinks. So eye movement. So we think about when we're asleep that our eyes are moving, REM sleep, rapid eye movement. That's what right. It is. And your eyes are moving back and forth. And really in mechanical layman's terms, your eyes are processing your memories of the day and packaging them into short-term or long-term memory. Sometimes our trauma gets stuck in there and doesn't process. And so what EMDR does is physically do it instead of your body doing it for you. That you open that up, you recall those things, you connect them to current events, so that you can then process them through your recall process and your long-term, short-term memory. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to say it. You know, just thinking through that thought of making those connections, you know, our body is designed to heal itself, yeah. Right? If I cut my finger immediately, my body rushes to that wound to try to fix it. I think also we are designed to heal ourselves emotionally and mentally. Now that's, you know, theory according to Nathan,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just that we're never taught how. Mm-hmm. We're never taught how to heal ourselves through some of the mental and emotional things we've been through. And I think EMDR is a great tool to use in order to be able to help that process mature and come to a place where you can heal from that past trauma.
Yeah. And of course, EMDR is one of many tools that one can use. And depending on what your diagnosis may be, there may be a particular skill set that would help you to process better. You know, there's cognitive behavioral therapy, EMDR, you know, there even hypnotherapy, which I don't really know how I feel about it, but I have a friend who's a hypnotherapist and does very well. So there are an abundant amount of resources for you. Nathan, it was great to have you today on Doc Talks. We appreciate your willingness to be here.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate you having me.
No problem. And if you're a pastor and you're struggling, maybe you don't know where to go. Maybe you don't even know if these feelings are legitimate that you should be having. I would tell you this. Any way you feel, it's okay to feel that way. God created you to have feelings. Just don't unpack and live there, because there is a better day that we can look forward to if we allow God to intervene in our heart and we use the things that He has created, the wisdom and knowledge of others, to guide us through this journey. And there's absolutely no shame. And if you're a pastor and you're dealing with those things, we encourage you to reach out to us here at Doc Talks, and we can get you connected with mental health professionals such as Nathan to help guide you through these process. And I would tell you, as a pastor, to a church member, there's absolutely no shame in reaching out to a mental health professional. As a matter of fact, I would have more respect for you as an individual because you were vulnerable enough to reach out and get help. Nathan, again, it's good to be here with you today. I appreciate you and appreciate all you do there.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
All right. Doc Brian, you can find me at thedocbrian.com. Find all of my social media content there. Of course, you can find us on lifeword.org. Find all their Christian content there as well. Thank you for being here with us today, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.